previously on the Odd Job Pod.
This means Group A, we have Maxzorin, Scaramanga and Largo. I mean, that's a deadly group if ever I saw one. Lots of people very handy with their guns in there. Group B is Silver, Lechifre and Sanchez. And my gosh, that's one who you could probably throw a blanket over that villainry in there and they'd all be very close together. Group C is Kananga, Koskov and Goldfinger. And Group D is Electra King and Double Blofeld. So both Donald Pleasance and Telly Savalas go into that group, which I think makes Group D probably one of the most interesting ones we've got. But they're all pretty evil. I mean, chaps, how evil are we feeling right now at this point?
There's a lot of evil going on here. I'm feeling pretty scared right now.
Yeah,
in the presence of such evil.
It's getting increasingly harder here.
Yeah, it's getting quite perilous. It's getting very dangerous.
Perilous
now.
Here. Yeah. Perilous.
Well, I mean, what to say, really? I mean, I guess we just need to make our picks, really, don't we?
We do, yeah.
We do indeed. So,
who wants to start? Gary, why don't you start with Group A? Tell us, what do you think?
I will start with Group A. Oh, Group A is tough, really tough, because you've got three classic villains in there. You've got Largo, who we've talked about, the wonderful performance in there. Yes, Thunderball's not the greatest film, but Largo carries it all the way through and very much a worthy adversary of Bond. Zorin, obviously completely psychopathic. It's Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken as Bond villain was something that was meant to happen, but so was Christopher Lee as Scaramanga. Now, when I actually look at the three films, I think probably my favourite of those three is probably Thunderball, followed by A View to a Kill, followed by The Man with the Golden Gun. But when I talk about villainry, actually, there's one person that stands out for me, and that is Christopher Lee Scaramanga. He's just so suave and sophisticated. And again, when you talk about equals of Bond, he is right up there. He is probably one of Bond's greatest challenges. The movie itself might not be brilliant, but Christopher Lee's portrayal is just fantastic. And I think this is probably where Zorin hits his limit. He is brilliant of his time. He's incredibly psychopathic. He's incredibly evil. There's so much fun moments. He pretty much carries that whole film because Roger Moore's just too old throughout the whole of A View to a Kill. Largo is solid. He's again, I think when you put him up against Scaramanga, he just doesn't quite compete. So for me, I would round out this group as probably being Scaramanga, then Largo, then Zorin for me. And that's a very tight group. I mean, again, probably Zorin and Largo separated on you know, just general nuttiness. But I would put Scaramanga top. I just think Christopher Lee's performance is fantastic. The character is fantastic and thoroughly deserved winner.
Terry?
I am Team Largo, but I have so much personal affection for, well, all three of them, really. Zorin the psychopath, Zorin the groundbreaker, Zorin is Christopher Walken, but, I mean, you're talking about, you know, it's a battle between two Christophers, really.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to go old school and go Chris Lee, because I just have to. But I really, I wish I could sort of like give a definitive reason why, but I think it's just because I think there's just an extra polish to the Chris Lee's performance that I appreciate, that maybe I just don't detect in Christopher Walken. But really, that's a massively unfair and subjective statement. So, I mean, anyone listening to this who disagrees, I completely understand why you would disagree. Because, he is one of the greats. I guess for me, Man with the Golden Gun is probably a better film than A View to a Kill. So maybe you could go from there. But I'm going Scaramanga top. Scaramanga goes through.
Yep. Graham, are you going to make any last-minute bids to try and put Zorin through on top? Because you can certainly tell that there's a lot of love within there and a lot of wavering.
Yeah.
Do you have any last push for that?
No,
or are you,
no.
Acquiescing as well?
Group A was always going to be difficult because it was likely to have two seeds in it, as was Group B. So it was always going to be a tougher group. But I think Scaramanga carries it. I think the performance there, the scenes with him and Roger Moore are just sublime and are are franchise gold, really, and save what is a very ordinary film.
Yeah, the I mean, you've mentioned it on a number of occasions. The dinner scene in and it's interesting because you're making a decision really on the basis of how well Roger Moore goes up against him, and I think that maybe that makes a difference in your mind because of that particular scene. Whereas, I mean, like Roger Moore by View to a Kill is very, very tired, and just, you know, Zorin just doesn't really. You know, he dominates those sequences. So, yeah, good call. I mean, I think we have a choice then.
We have indeed.
It's Scaramanga.
Scaramanga is the first and finalist.
Proceed to Group B.
Group B. And Terry, I will let you kick off Group B. And for me, this one, I'm going to be absolutely fascinated to see where you go on this. Because Group B, we have Silva, the Chiffre, and Sanchez. Terry, who do you see topping Group B?
Well, Sanchez has got the real menace, and but doesn't have that desperate strategy. There's an arrogance, and the arrogance is his undoing. He's complacent. Mm. He's too trusting of Bond, and that's what does him. Put him up against Le Chiffre's desperation, as you say, the savagery from desperation. And then you've got Silva, who for me, I am swayed by what Gary's saying about Silva. That does drift a little bit into pantomime, perhaps.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually going to put Silva third in this.
Right.
And I'm going to make it between Le Chiffre and Sanchez. And I'm really, it's probably flipping a coin here, but I'm going for the stronger film, which is Casino Royale, and therefore I'm going for Le Chiffre.
Well, I can imagine that there's plenty of Bond fans who are listening right now who might be coming through in outrage with Silver being placed in third place.
They want to review.
But, so, Graham, Graham, are you going to be challenging this one particularly? Where does your villainous heart lie in Group B?
My villainous heart lies with Le Chiffre for this one. He's coming through. I'm not going to say who's going to finish second or third. I don't think it matters really. This is by far the strongest group, I think, as a whole. If you look at all three of them there, for me anyway, that this one is the strongest group, and for Le Chiffre to come out really. Really does say something for the quality of Mads Mikkelsen's performance there, and of the film itself. And yes, it is a tough choice. Any one of these would have been worthy semi-finalists, even finalists. But for me, it's Le Chiffre that gets it through.
So Le Chiffre goes through to the, well, does he? Because I haven't picked mine yet.
You haven't picked yours yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I haven't made my pitch. Well, I am with Terry in that I put Silva, I think, is the one that trails this group. I just think there's just a bit too much pantomime that goes on in there. And ultimately, I think that's the thing that does it for me. He's a great character, played brilliantly well. But I think when it starts descending into that Home Alone element at the end, and there's just a bit too much in there that I can't, in all honesty, put him through. So Le Chiffre or Sanchez, I've been really weighing this up because, honestly, Roberto Davi is one of my favourites. And everything you said, Terry, about having, you have obviously most recently watched License to Kill, there's such menace through there. And I actually quite like the fact that his arrogance is his undoing. And that's a very good villainous trait as well, that he just seems to underestimate Bond. But he's just so savage as well, you know, putting and also has some great lines as well. You know, what do we do with the money? Launder it. That's one of my favourite villain lines throughout the whole of the series. And also, let's not forget, when we talk about obviously anchoring in past roles as well with Scaramanga and Chris Lee, Roberto Davi, obviously The Goonies as well, which is a wonderful villainous performance that he gives in there in a very different way. And when you put those two side by side, you go, this guy can pretty much do anything. I'm going to have to go with Le Chiffre as well. I would really love to put Sanchez through. And I think actually if he'd been... certainly if he'd been in Group C or Group D, I think he'd be in the semi-final. I think he's just so unfortunate he's come up against Mads Mikkelsen, who is probably one of the best actors in the whole of the Bond franchise, and just was born to play that role. And the desperation, the evilness has to go to Le Chiffre for me. So yes, Le Chiffre goes through. So we have two semi-finalists, Scaramanga and his opponent yet to be decided, and Le Chiffre and his opponent yet to be decided. So Graham, Group C, we have Kananga, Georgi Koskov, and Orik Goldfinger.
Yeah, tough, because I really love Yaphet Kotto as Kananga. He plays that brilliantly in a film that is definitely of its time. But he is such a different villain. And the fact that he plays two characters for a lot of it as well also adds something to it. Rather unconvincingly plays two characters, I must admit. But you know, the prosthetics weren't what they were back then. But Goldfinger really, really is, as I say, the iconic... He's a guy who really did define a lot about how the franchise would succeed from when it was made back in the early 60s. Obviously, From Russia With Love, great film. We love it. Won the World Cup of Bond films. And, of course, Goldfinger came immediately afterwards when they were full of confidence and they threw everything at it and they came up with something brilliant. And they've been referring back to that film ever since, and especially with the villainry there. So I look at Goldfinger and I see the template of Bond villains. And while Kananga's role is brilliant, and we've already gone through, Koskov has sneaked into this group. So his time has come. His time has definitely come. He's third in this group for me. Kananga second, Goldfinger top.
Terry, there's a heavy sigh here, and I think this is a decision
that weighs very... I'm preparing myself to pitch Kananga. I think that the fact that he plays two roles.
Yeah.
I think that the sequences with Jane Seymour.
Yeah.
I think that sequence in which he threatens to drop off Roger Moore's finger when he's testing solitaire starts and then proceeds to the more vital areas, and just general Yaphet Kotto, just generally, again, there's a naturalness to his performance which I appreciate, which reminds me a lot of Telly Savalas' role in Blofeld. Goldfinger is a little bit stiff,
yeah,
and it's a 1960s movie and it's a little bit dated for me, so I'm going Kananga.
Well, here you go, Gary. You've got the casting vote here. Who's going through?
I did not expect to be... I honestly thought I would be making a pitch for Kananga to top the group and having that deciding vote. And now I've had to just think to myself, well, can I really put Goldfinger out? Goldfinger is probably one of the most iconic villains, if not the most iconic, after Blofeld. But then there is just something this is probably two of my favorite Bond films of all time and probably two of the strongest Bond films of all time, and I think that's reflected in just how strong both these villains are. And I look at both of them and I go, yes, I can see where Terry's coming from a little bit in the stiffness, but also the fact that you kind of feel that with Goldfinger and Gert Frobe, a fantastic actor, but that actually I think kind of Connery plays him perfectly on the screen, whereas I think Yaphet Kotto, he just steals every scene that he's in, but he never hogs it at all, and there's just so many great lines that come out of him. And again, this is like a wafer thin margin, but for me, I just think he's a fantastic character. The film was very problematic, as Bond does blaxploitation is never going to be a pitch that would sell today. But just the whole way that the film's constructed, the henchmen, everything in there, and the fact that he ties up, and there's just that consistent villainry. And actually, again, of its time, it's not world domination, it's drug smuggling that plays a big part of it. But that sheer level of villainry and evilness in there, yes, Goldfinger's plan is much bigger and bolder and brassier, but there's something about Kananga that's just got a hint of much more menace about him, and he sneaks through on They're just a hint more menace for me.
Wow.
They're Golfinger out before the semi-finals.
Well,
the thing is that Katanga finished behind Zorin in the group stage, and yet here he is going through the semis.
Yes,
I think we kind of, you know, I rationalise that, and obviously this is our pod, so we can do what we want. But I rationalise that on the basis that we always knew that Katanga was going through, and at that stage, the early stages, Zorin hits his peak form far too early, and then just can't sustain it when he comes up against a best player, whereas Katanga is probably much like, I don't know, probably France in the last World Cup, that didn't start particularly fast,
and Italy,
but just got more solid throughout.
It's the nature of the format as well. If we were ranking these villains from top to bottom and doing it that way, then Zorin might well be among the top five or top six, but it's not that way. We've done it by this convoluted Spain 82 format, which... So, you know, that's how it is. The World Cup winners are not the best team. You're rarely, they're actually not often the best team in the world. They're just the team that wins the tournament.
Yeah.
So
who's going to pitch in first for Group D?
I think it's Graham's turn for, isn't it?
I went first last time.
Did you really?
Yeah, I beg your pardon.
Oh, in that case, it'll be your turn, Gary.
Go on, Gary.
Oh, wow. I mean, this is, I think all the other groups, while there's a lot of, you know, tough decisions to be made, I think I got them in my mind by looking at them first off. But this one's tough, and it's between two, and it's not between the two Blofelds, because I think we've already done the podcast on Blofeld, and we've already established that Telly Savalas is probably, for us, his Blofeld is the best Blofeld. Donald Pleasence's Blofeld is very good. But the fact that I didn't even put Donald Pleasence's Blofeld into the top two, for me, means that I think he's out of this one, and Telly Savalas is there in top. Now, Electra King is almost kind of like that wild card who just gets stronger and stronger the more you look at her. And the fact that she's in such a dreadful film, and yet I still have so much positive to say about her. The fact that scene between her and Judi Dench is just electric. And the fact that she's just got no remorse whatsoever. I am genuinely torn, and I could probably be swayed either way if either of you want to make a pitch. I'm going to sneak in just for Blofeld, because I think Blofeld is such an iconic part of the Bond canon that it would probably be a bit odd not to have him in the semi-final. But I still think Electra King is probably one of the, in such a badly written film, she's actually probably one of the best written Bond villains. And she's not, you know, there's nothing necessarily remarkable about her, but then everything you put that builds her up to that state of the final villainry is just done so coolly and calculating, and throws everybody off the scent. She's a fantastic villain. So I put Telly Savalas' Blofeld through, because he is a fantastic performance, and everything about Honor Majesty's Secret Service is a brilliant film. But I could be persuaded for Electra King if either, let's say, Graham, if you want to persuade me, and either way, then I might be persuaded.
I'd like to be able to, but I think Telly Savalas' Blofeld does win this. I think you've got it right in a 1-2-3 in this group. Interestingly, what you said about King and about Sophie Marceau's interaction there with Judi Dench and those scenes, and you see the same with Telly Savalas' Blofeld in the scenes with Diana Rigg, and the fact of going up against strong female actors, characters, then you get you get a different view of the villain. With King, you see it as a female villain. You see something very, very different there. And obviously with Blofeld, you see him as, well, this is Blofeld at some kind of point in his power, when he thinks nothing is going to stop him. and I think this is, he carries off this, his evil, even when Diana Rigg is pointing out his own hubris. It is such an amazing part of that film. It's a film that does, it's so good it doesn't even need Bond in it. That's how good this film is. And for large periods he's not in it. And if anyone, the closest thing to Bond in that film is Diana Rigg, And he is such an excellent foil for her character. So he goes through in this. I don't even think it's that close actually with King, because the film is just so appalling that she's great in it, but it just stinks. So, and yes, Donald Pleasance, yes, he was lucky to be here. We almost put him in here because of the fact that we felt we should. So it's Telly Savalas' Blofeld.
So I think it's worth
Terry.
I think it's worth pointing out that it's also worth pointing out that although for the outsiders, Blofeld is one of the most high profile of the Bond villains, and he's been represented four times in this World Cup. It's at four different but we're at a point now where he might not even actually make it into the final four.
Yeah.
And that also then goes to show you that there's more to James Bond than Blofeld, particularly when it comes to villains. The things to say about Electric King that haven't been said before are probably also to pick up on that relationship with Renard. Robert Carlyle, we've kind of put Renard in as a kind of henchman. But I think initially he was sold as the villain because obviously they didn't want to reveal the actual villain's identity.
Yeah.
But I mean, Robert Carlyle played Renard, I thought, extremely well. And I think that when they got to the point where, in fact, we found out that he was the henchman, and then those scenes, particularly in the bedroom, and just how completely in love and besotted and devoted he was to her and willing to do anything for her, I think did escalate her to a very, very high level. But to a real villain. The torturing of James Bond also, again, she did that with such panache. It's just a shame that Pierce wasn't able to match that. He doesn't do torture very well. I believe, Gary, you said it was more like Pierce Brosnan's sex face than his torture face. And unfortunately, these are the moments that let down Electric King, and is the reason why, you know, I'm putting Telly Savalas in. There's also a personal element to me. Unimated Success, my favourite film. Telly Savalas, I just thought he was at the peak of his powers in that moment. And for all those reasons that Graham has just said, particularly those scenes with Diana Rigg, absolutely, really memorable. And so Telly Savalas is topping that group in my book as well, which I believe is in everyone's book. Yes, or Gary?
It is indeed.
Yeah.
No, it is. It is. And I think that probably group was a lot harder than I think anybody would have anticipated it being. But it just goes to show, I think, how strong and how good Sophie Marceau's performance was. The fact that we're arguing almost trying to make a case for why she should be probably one of the most iconic Bond performances of all time. That says volumes about it. Not that I would encourage any of our listeners to necessarily run back and revisit The World is Not Enough. If they haven't done it for a while, it's not a great film, but there's a lot to enjoy in her performance. So actually, I was just going to just read out one tweet that we had from, which I think is apt to put in at this stage. And this was from the 00 files, at the 00 files. For me, it is Blofeld from Russia with Love and Thunderball, the ultimate Bond villain, the way he should be presented as an unknown force pulling all the strings, and that voice, ... I think that, to me, I could quite easily make a case for that Blofeld being the best Bond villain of all time, because he's such an unknown malevolent force. I like that tweet a lot.
Yep, I like that tweet a lot. Yes. I like that opinion.
We give that our thumbs up.
Definitely. Yep.
Yes.
Definitely. So that's an alternative take, because, you know, hey, we like to riff off. It's at this stage of the tournament that we just produce sort of slightly random VOs where we might riff off on bits and pieces here and there. But so we have the two semi-final lineups, and boy, they are quite a semi-final lineup. We have Scaramanga, played by Christopher Lee, versus Kananga, played by Yaphet Kotto, and we have Le Chiffre, played by Mads Mikkelsen, versus Telly Savalas' Blofeld from On Her Majesty's Secret Service. This is really where it comes down to some pretty epic villainry. And actually, I think it's quite interesting when we look at the films that ended up in our top four, our semi-finals for our past World Cup of Bonds, which may have been affected by the bottles of port that had been consumed in the run-up to that podcast. But the villains are not wildly dissimilar to the films that we've ended up there. And I don't think that's necessarily been intentional on the way through, but it certainly, I think, shows where our mindset's at. But there is obviously one standout there, which is Scaramanga, which was Man with the Golden Gun was nowhere near the top four films that we had there. So I'm going to go to Terry first for the first semi-final of Scaramanga versus Kananga, stroke Mr. Big.
Okay, so the answer is I don't know.
I mean, this is how this is the kind of tech that we come to a podcast for.
And I'm conscious of the fact that I might end up repeating myself by going over it again. So, I mean, it is very much going to have to be a flip of a coin, I guess. I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take a measure of the value, perhaps, of the movies. I can't even sort of like figure out how they would get on in a fight. I can't even partridge this and say, you know, Scaramanga, Kananga in a fight, who wins? I don't know. I don't know what would happen if they were to, you know, pit their wits against each other. I think that I'm going to choose my criteria on the realisticness of the plans.
Right.
And that way I'm going for Kananga. Because I think his is a little bit more doable.
Yeah.
I think that the Solex was a bullshit idea, and I think that that stupid gun that he had that didn't even fire a frickin' laser is stupid. But the fun house though.
The fun house.
I forgot the fun
house. Come on, and as well, building your gun out of your fag lighter.
Yeah,
and your
he got a gun out of a fag lighter. That's true. And he has got three tits as well.
And he's got three tits. He drinks black velvet.
Yeah, all right, okay, but you know, at the same time, you know, Kananga's got the gun with. Oh no, that's actually not his gun, is it?
No.
Oh, should we do it by the quality of the company he keeps, the henchmen that he had? No, it's a tough one. It's such a tough one.
You got to go with the gut. What's your gut telling you?
My gut is actually telling me Scaramanga.
Of course it is.
Because I just love that character more than I love Kananga, I guess. Yeah. I'm just going to have to go for it.
Yeah.
Scaramanga.
You want to have Kananga in the final, but at the expense of Scaramanga?
But not at the expense of Scaramanga. Okay, so I'm choosing Scaramanga.
Gary, sway us.
Yeah, try and be a little bit more ordered about it than me.
My word. I mean, this to me is one of those ones where you look and go, this potentially should be the final because of you've got two exceptionally brilliant villains. You've got the quality of film, Live and Let Die is a much better film than Man with the Golden Gun. I'm with Terry in terms of the plans. You know, Kananga's plan is a lot more grounded in realism. And actually, it's for all the kind of ridiculousness that Bond has in a lot of his films and for all the problems with Live and Let Die, actually, there is a lot more grounding in that film than I think a lot of other Bond films. And there's a lot more just kind of sheer fear and raw brutality. And I think it's also fascinating for me that you kind of see the two films, and obviously they follow each other. So Kananga was Moore's first adversary, Scaramanga the second one. And actually, this is why I lean just towards Kananga, but it's a big just. And that's simply because I think when you look at the two films and you look at Moore and you look at the canon in there and how they follow one another and you put them up against each other, yes, Scaramanga could probably, you know, knock off Kananga in a straight fight because he's probably better at shooting. But I think Kananga's got a whole better organization around him. The sheer brutality of some of what he does and the sheer wonderful planning that goes into every element of him. They're just, you know, brilliant bit of villainry lair. You know, you've got a good island in there. There's so much that I like about him. And this is tough, but Christopher Lee is a brilliant actor. Scaramanga is a fantastic character in there, cool, debonair. Bond's equal very much in status. And it's one that actually you know that Bond's going to win, but it plays it very, very tough right up until the end. And you kind of get a feeling, actually, if you were doing an alternative reality, they would just take one slip and Bond would not get out of that alive, which I think is more than possibly could be said for many other films. But Man with the Golden Gun is not one of my favorite films. I think Christopher Lee is fantastic. He deserves to be in the top four. Can I put him through to the final, Spencer Kananga? I can't. I've got to put Yaphet Kotto in there. I just think he is fantastic and deserves his time to shine and to be recognised as one of the best Bond villains of all time. So I will go Kananga.
It's a powerful argument there, Graham. It's a powerful argument. I'm thinking about swaying.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about swaying.
Because
let's see what you have to say about it.
I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, I know what you mean. I think if this was a World Cup of villainry rather than villains, and I'm talking about the whole, look at each film and see what was the what would have won it on villainry, then Live and Let Die would win, because the whole organisation that Kananga's got is going to take some beating.
It's a better caper, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big caper. But villains, Scaramanga, the assassin. Assassin, it's you really do wish it was in a better film. And it could have been a lot better. And yes, you're right, the Solex is a pile of crap. but you know,
and the flying car is a pile of crap as well.
The flying car is a honking pile of crap. Yes, there's lots of crap in this film. However, the guy builds a gun out of his cufflinks. The cufflinks are his trigger. I love that bit. And he is brilliant in it. Yaphet Kotto is brilliant, man.
He is
fantastic. And and underused. And I'm thinking about also Roger Moore and the way they interact. And I think he interacts a lot better with Scaramanga than he does with Kananga. Read into that what you will, but I am going to go with Scaramanga, but by the hair's breadth. This is a penalty shootout. We got Kananga. He'll be with his hands on his hips in the centre circle, wondering how do we not win this? Why aren't we going to be in the final? Why are we going to have to like go through the charade of the third place playoff?
Yeah,
and Scaramanga's going to be there. That's for me anyway. Have you swayed?
I think not because I just think that there are some scenes involving Scaramanga there are some genuinely memorable scenes that I think just occupy my mind more, just ever so slightly more than Kananga. And so I think. Just that whole business when he's... Yeah. It goes back to the dinner scene.
Yeah.
That dinner scene, I think, is a great scene. And I think that's the reason why he's getting it. Just that one scene.
I've got a line from each.
Yeah, go on.
And let's see if that's going to say, he always did like that mausoleum.
Put him in it.
Or, names is for tombstones, baby.
Names is for tombstones, baby. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
But we'll go with Scaramanga, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bittersweet.
Bittersweet. Sorry, Gary.
No, I'm... You know what? I can't say I'm upset on there. And, I mean, it as you say, this is one that goes right down to the wire. This is not just a penalty shootout. This is a penalty shootout that is going on to, like, 10 penalties apiece before they...
It's got the goalkeepers taking penalties.
It's got keepers.
Yeah.
This is the equivalent of in Wimbledon, Marhut versus Isner, the tennis match that went on for 3 days. This is the level that we're talking about on this one, and it's just such fine margins going through. So
it's not
going
to get any easier for the next semi-final, though.
Well, I'm going to... I actually have a very easy decision on this one. So I will happily kick off semi-final two, which is Le Chiffre versus Blofeld, and I'm going Le Chiffre. This one actually was a lot easier for me, and this is partly just due to... We've talked... And I think this is fascinating, because on one hand, actually, when you look at the scale of the organisation, you basically have the financier up against his boss. But the financier is desperate. You think he will do absolutely anything to stay alive, and that's what makes him so dangerous. And the other fascinating thing is when actually you look against Bond and you go, who is Bond's equal, who he's up against. You wouldn't necessarily put Le Chiffre as Bond's equal per se, because he's, you know, he certainly wouldn't be able to take Bond in a fight. I think Bond would be a better sharpshooter. And yet, he's probably the one who's come closest to knocking off Bond of everybody, because Bond doesn't dispose of him. Bond is actually handed a Deus Ex Machina and basically get out of jail free card. And you actually think, you know, this is a point where, you know, the villain is probably come closest to anybody to getting rid of Bond. Telefax of Alice Blofeld, I mean, we've gone through this so many times on already in this podcast, just how good he is, and just how good on Her Majesty's Secret Service is. And I mean, Casino Royale and on Her Majesty's Secret Service are easily up there as some of the best Bond films of all time. And I think it's just simply because I don't hold Blofeld quite in the same love that perhaps some people do, and we've talked about the fact that he's not necessarily an essential part of Bond. Yes, there's the myth around him, but he's not the best villain at the end of the day. And I can see as Blofeld, you know, the fact that he keeps losing to Bond, you know, and yes, we're taking him across a number of them, but there is that kind of hubris in there, and the fact that the Chiffre just gets that bit closer, and the fact, at the end of the day, it's Mads Mikkelsen. This is Hannibal. This is Bond going up against Hannibal. You can't not have Le Chiffre in the final. For me, Mads Mikkelsen would be a worthy adversary for Christopher Lee. And you look at those two actors and you can see so much similarity between them. So, yeah, I didn't even have to make a choice in this one. It wasn't hard for me. It was Le Chiffre all the way.
You go.
No. I went second last time. You go second this time.
Well, you're going to have to come up with something to sway us.
Okay. You're going for Le Chiffre, are you?
I think I am.
Yeah, okay.
I think when you look at these two, you've got Le Chiffre and you've got Blofeld. Blofeld is at the top of his game in on the Manchester Secret Service.
Yep.
He is right at the top. He is master villain, master plan. Everyone else is below him. Le Chiffre is just at the point where he's about to become a major villain. He is, at the moment, he's a cog in a huge machine. If this caper comes off, then he is going to be the guy who's going to be the top of the tree. And so you almost see something coming in to the... it works very well within the film, where you see Bond coming out as a 00 agent. This is where this is his first major mission as a 00 agent.
Mm-hmm.
And it works so well with the two of them going up against each other. And he gets he does almost kill him on more than one occasion in this film. And so, we've espoused on this podcast so how good Blofeld's, Telly Savalas's role as Blofeld is. But I think it's all about who turns up on the day. And today, I think Le Chiffre edges it.
Okay.
So now you have to
because you know I will.
Because I know you will.
Because I am Team Savalas.
You are Team Savalas.
Team Telly.
Yeah. So Team Telly, come tell us why we're wrong and we should change our mind.
Okay. Well,
and why this should go to extra time.
So I think I would like to take this to extra time because on the basis of, everything that I've said about Le Chiffre, I stand by. Everything I've said about Mads Mikkelsen, I stand by. Everything you say about Le Chiffre and Mads Mikkelsen is absolutely 100% correct. But he doesn't quite share the villain role in there. Vesper also shares part of the villain role in that. Actually, it's Vesper at the end of the movie who dies, as the villain who dies in that movie, right?
Yeah.
Because actually that's the whole thing about that movie. I believe it's Le Chiffre just essentially gets taken out and shot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so you know, you could then maybe make the argument that actually Le Chiffre is a henchman and shouldn't actually be in this whole World Cup. So, you know, that's how big I'm going with this.
I think that's a bit tenuous, that one.
And
it is indeed
his master plan. That's you're right. Yeah, and yeah, he's basically taking out a massive mortgage and hoping that he can make the payments on time. And he will be paying. If he doesn't, then the interest is his life.
Yeah.
And obviously doesn't put it off. So, and also he doesn't necessarily get foiled by Bond as well, does he? It's not like the kind of traditional Bond ending. So, I mean, I'm going going for that. And so and on the positive side of things, and I was going to save this for the final, but I think I'm going to have to drop this one out now.
Okay.
Like, Blofeld totally kills James Bond's wife.
There is that.
Yeah.
That is pretty villainous.
Guns are down in the street.
Yeah.
That's a card that is quite something. And you know, if you're being fair and you're playing devil's advocate, you could point out that actually, whilst he's not exactly somebody who appears in that film a huge amount, you could argue that actually Mr. White is actually the next level of villain up from the Chiffre. But...
Strong argument.
I'm
wavering you though, aren't I?
It's still Mads Mikkelsen, and he still cries blood, and he still whacks Bond in the ghoulies repeatedly in one of the most unpleasant scenes in the whole of it.
You can't forget the ghoulies.
I wasn't forgetting the Goonies. I was just hoping that you would forget the Goonies. I said Goonies, didn't I? Yeah, I think I've defended him. I think I've done well here, but I'm not sure I've done enough.
You've done well.
Too little, too late.
Yeah. I'm sticking with Le Chiffre, actually.
Oh, God. Okay.
Gary, are you sticking with Le Chiffre?
I'm very much sticking with Le Chiffre. I mean, what Terry pulled out there was the equivalent of, like, an 88-minute screamer that everybody suddenly got in a tight match that looks like it's heading in one direction, and everybody suddenly gets on the edge of their seat. But, I think, it still has to be Le Chiffre.
Oh, well, at least I played all my cards. You did indeed.
Because,
I mean, I was saving that one for... Because I knew at some point I'd end up having to lock heads with you guys over Telly Savalas, because... You know, I know you love him, but I know you don't love him as much as I do.
You're right. You don't.
Yeah.
It was just an inevitability.
Right.
So we'll very briefly, and Terry might need to bring out the big guns again, of the third place, Penanga versus Blofeld. We'll do this one relatively quickly. Graham, who takes the bronze medal of villains for you?
Blofeld.
Terry?
I want to be contrary and say Kananga, but I've got too much respect for the character, so no, Blofeld.
Blofeld. Okay. I'm going for Kananga, but I'm not going to argue that heavily because it's a third place playoff and most people probably aren't listening for this bit and are just kind of going quick get to the finals. So Blofeld takes bronze. Kananga, good effort given that he didn't top the group, and Yaphet Kotto, I think we've all agreed, is one of the finest actors to grace Bond with his villainous presence. So we move into the final, and I'm going to start with Terry because I think he expended so much energy on Optimus Ballas that I just feel that he now can sort of get back in and get back onto an even creel. And you have the Chiffre versus Scaramanga, Mads Mikkelsen versus Christopher Lee, Cufflink Guns versus the Ghoulies. Where do you go with this one, Terry?
Yeah, well, now that Blofeld is out of the race, I can now channel my Le Chiffre love. There is no arguing with the performance of Mads Mikkelsen, and there is no arguing with some of the scenes in that film. It's just, and we'll always go back to the Ghoulies. And but I mean, let's also consider also there's that great scene when he's on his yacht and he's he dismisses those friends that he's just like playing with as if he doesn't even care. So you see that kind of sociopathic element to his character, which is good. The card scenes are really, really good. In the casino, these casino scenes are also really good. The constantly clicking his chips and, you know, just the way that he's just the controlled performance by Mikkelsen. Absolutely sensational. He has more screen time, I think, than Scaramanga. He's in a better film than Scaramanga. He does more damage, really, I think, than Scaramanga. He's more savage. He's more villainous, and frankly, he's more modern. So my choice is Le Chiffre.
Graham.
Now you have to doubt. Yes, now you are. No. Now you. Now I know. Don't worry, Graham. I know exactly how you feel because I know this is. I know Scaramanga's your guy.
Actually, he is. But you're right. It is Le Chiffre. Mm. It is. I know what you were saying, and especially to go back when you played the big card. But the thing about Le Chiffre's villainy is that he is so evil in this film. And yet, at the end, you find out that he is just part of a very much more evil thing. Now, you said that, you know, Blofeld killed Bond's wife.
Yeah.
But this evil organisation caused his, in the love of his life, to kill herself.
Yes.
And so this is how evil this organisation is. And Le Chiffre is very, very evil, and he's played brilliantly, but he's only a tiny cog, and this is just shows exposes the whole the scale of the problem that Bond is going to have going forward, because you can take out one person, but this is just one person in an organization,
cut off one head,
etc.
But you're making a case actually for Scaramanga, Estella, aren't you? Then in that case, is that what you're doing?
No, not really. I think Le Chiffre manages to portray the fact that he is a cog, but he is so well played, and he is, as I said in the semi-final, he is an emerging master villain.
Yeah, he'd be like Largo if Largo was going for the Karg, if Largo was going for Blofeld's job in Thunderball,
for example.
Which is not, obviously he wasn't, but if
what a great plot twist that would be made. Quite,
if actually this was a plot to take
and that may be something that they can go to in the next film, a villain that going after the big chair.
Yep, going after number one.
But that for me, Le Chiffre gets it. Gary. Sway us, Gary.
I would love to, and much as I love Christopher Lee's performance, the fact that all the way through when I've been arguing, I've been highlighting the flaws in the fact that the film itself is a little bit ropey in places and a little bit problematic. And also, yes, it's not a World Cup of villainy, it's a World Cup of villain. Christopher Lee is incredibly suave, brilliant, just a dynamic and compelling screen presence, but there's just, to me, not quite enough. And again, if I put the two films down and if I watched them back to back, I think I would come out Mads Mikkelsen's Le Chiffre every time. Just the sheer desperation, and you've also got a sense that there is with Lee, there's a lot more sort of control and planning to Scaramanga's villainry, whereas the Chiffre is very much almost making it up as he goes along. But what he makes up is probably far more evil than most people would do if they were planning everything out. And if you take it back to one of the other heavy hitters that got knocked out earlier, which was Goldfinger, very meticulously planned. But that almost makes him a little too vulnerable, because he doesn't believe that his plans can be bettered. The Chiffre knows that his plans are very, very ropey. He's very tenuous as to whether he can actually pull the whole thing off. He's not just fighting Bond. He's fighting his whole organization at the same point in time, because he's taken all their money and run. But that makes him so dangerous. And the improvisation that goes into it, and the way that he just gets increasingly frantic in how he aims to dispose of Bond is just brilliant. And again, you just come down to those card scenes in the table, and it's a wonderful, tense piece of filmmaking. You could take that out of Bond and put it in any other film, and it would be acclaimed as a masterpiece of a scene. You know, it's the kind of thing that you go, when you look at those kind of, you know, when you've got Craig and Mikkelsen up against each other, you know, I wouldn't quite say it's the level of, say, De Niro and Pacino in Heat, but it's one of those ones where you've got two handers in there that you go, whoa, these two actors are going at it. And yeah, for me, it is Le Chiffre.
We have a winner.
We do have a winner. And gentlemen, I think it's fair to say, going into this, I don't think any of us would have predicted this is where we would have ended up at all.
I don't think so, although I don't think anyone should be surprised that Le Chiffre would win such a competition, because he is obviously such a cracking villain, and also one of the best ever James Bond films.
Yeah.
So it does make sense.
And he knows how to play a game as well.
He does know how to play a game, yeah. And he played it well.
Yes.
He played it well. I mean, I think it's nice. We've got a nice... But I mean, that final four is nice. Le Chiffre, Scaramanga, Kananga, Blofeld. I mean, there's a good mixture there. You've got movies from the 70s, from the 60s, and you know, obviously a modern movie as well. I think it also reflects nicely that that kind of dip in the 90s, you know, with the Pierce Brosnan era when things, you know, wasn't that good. So, I mean, I think that on balance, we can be pleased with our decisions that we've made.
Yes, yeah.
And I hope that the listeners, at least if they don't agree with them, can understand why we've made these choices, because we've spent long enough explaining them, after all.
Yeah, we certainly have.
Yeah, and if they could come up with a better winner than in this format.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, if we were, like I was just saying before, actually, if we were ranking this, like saying, let's go 1 to 25, your best and worst, then it would probably be somewhat different, but not altogether that much difference. But the fun is the format of it. That's taking this rather convoluted journey.
And the discussion. Kananga got to the semi-finals, didn't even win his group.
No.
So, absolutely. So, that's, got to the third place playoff against Blofeld.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I will just, thank you very much for sticking with us, listeners. And I'll just finish this by, there's a few great arguments that were chucked out on Twitter, so I'm just going to fire a few of these out. Paul Salt said, gotta be Creepy Silver for me. He's what Bond is, a hair's breadth from being himself, and his chemistry as Bond is fabulous. Bar to him, played him with great flair. Hard to disagree with that. I've made clear that I'm not the biggest Silver fan, but I think that's a very, very good, compelling argument. We've mentioned Dominic Patterson, who called out Emilio Largo for wearing a double-breasted blazer on top of his diving gear. Yes, fantastic in there. Also, then you've got Gel Nerd, Max, who went for Max Zorin. Anyone who finds humour in gunning down innocent men or about to fall to his death, never mind giving a great quote here and there, deserves to be in the list. Then you've also got, you know, lots of people went for Scaramanga. One that I've got to call out, which is probably the most disturbing one of the lot, which was Manchester Classic Films, who went for a henchman rather than a villain and just tweeted us a gif of Mr. Kidd and Mr. Wint.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's that's someone who has some issues, and this is someone who you know. It's good that they're somehow functioning in normal society, but we really hope that they find the help that they so desperately need soon.
Well, yes. And then the final one that I will call out in there is at Betamax Pod, Betamax Video Club, Zorin for me, Clive. But gentlemen, it's been a long road to villainy. It's been a long, hard fought with lots of death, innocent cutting down, scenery chewing, henchmen, Bond villains, everything that you want from in there, and we end up with the Chiffre. It's been quite a roller coaster, quite a journey, and I think Terry and Graham, it's fair to say that we're probably done with villains for a little bit now on the pod.
I
believe so. Yeah.
Let's talk about something fluffy next time.
We'll talk about something fluffy next time.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes, we'll die another day.
Not that fluffy.
Yes, let's never think about Madonna's wonderful flirting with Pierce Brosnan in there. And yes, there's horrific imagery that flies through your mind at that point. So at which point, may I say congratulations to Le Chiffre and Mads Mikkelsen. Not that I'm sure he actually listens to this podcast, and he would have to be on a very delayed flight to have got to find out that the Odd Job Pod has ranked him as the best Bond villain of all time. But as ever, Terry and Graham, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your impassioned pleas. Hopefully, Terry is out there and will be going back home to his framed picture of Telly Savalas and apologising when he gets back.
My shrine, you mean?
Your shrine, Telly Savalas.
It's quite impressive.
We're going to go home and watch Kelly's Heroes and weep. And I unpack my Kojak box set.
Yeah. Or just flick over to ITV4, I'm sure.
Or just flick over to ITV4, because bound to be something with Taylor Vale, and sink to my knees and beg for forgiveness that I didn't do it. I didn't do it for you.
So yes, Terry and Graham, thank you so much. The Odd Job Pod will return, probably with a much shorter podcast next time once we settle on the topic. As ever, you can get hold of us on Facebook. Just look The Odd Job Pod. Please do, if you don't subscribe to us already and you've listened to the entire podcast for the first time and you've got all the way through, you can go back and listen to the previous back catalogue of Bond Villain. Just go to subscribe to us on all of the usual podcasting places. And you can also get hold of us on Twitter as well, at Odd Job Pod. And also there's a website with lots of other stuff on there, which is oddsjobpod.com. Terry, Graham, thank you.